Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk USA. Are you tired of waiting for change? Tune into Blog Talk USA. Let your voice be heard on Blog Talk USA.
Welcome, 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 everyone, right back here to Blog Talk USA Radio on Marvelous Monday, and it is indeed Marvelous Monday. It is so good to be here at the onset of tonight's show. As you know, I've been missing in action until around about 8:30-ish or so, because it is getting very, very close, everybody, to our international conference and convention that's going to be held there in Dallas, Texas this year for Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. And so we've been really excited about working with that for the last 3 years and our international president. And so, but tonight our meeting is not held tonight. It's going to be held tomorrow night. So I get to be here with an amazing team. We're so excited to be here with you tonight. Let's find out, of course, who all is here. And hopefully I'm not just here all by myself. Miss Rihanna will be coming in a little bit later on, our engineer. And so our lines are going to be open. We're hoping that we can have those city council contestants coming in tonight and tell us exactly why they think they are the best candidates for the position in District 2. I know who the best candidate is for District 3. That would be me, and I already hold that position. So we're looking forward to having them to come in. There's a third candidate that I did not have a telephone number for, Mr. Dinger. So we'll try to find him and invite him to come as well. There's three candidates that are running for that position, and so we want to hear from all of them. We want to make sure that the people that are running for these positions, that they know exactly what that position consists of. There's city government, there's state government, and there's federal government, all of which are very, very different one from the other when it comes to the duties. And so tonight we want to talk a little bit about the duties of a city council person once these contestants come in. I did hear from one of them, and so them to give us a text when they are able to come in to join us. Okay, so who do we have there? Let's see, Mr. Arthur, are you there? Pastor Cooper, are you there? Dr. Carr, are you there? And Dr. Hagney, are you there? And I believe we heard from Dr. Hagney on last week, and I think that he said that he would be joining us tonight. So whenever they come, I hope they'll click in and let us know that they're there. So I want to do a little housekeeping. We actually had a very, very busy week this past week. Of course, they're always very busy. But on Saturday, the East Texas Democratic Summit was held Commissioner and Pastor Ralph Caraway Senior's church. And so we always want to thank him for always opening up his doors, which I said on our radio show on Thursday, his doors are never closed. He always opened to the community for events. And so even though it was flooding, and let me tell you, Radio Land, it was flooding on Saturday, but the people did not let that stand in their way. They got out there. We had people from all across East Texas, from various counties, from all the way down to Anderson County, back up to Henderson County, and all around Angelina County, out there in Lufkin. We had people from everywhere all over East Texas that joined in with us, and we just appreciate everybody from stepping up and stepping out. So we want to thank, we call her DK. We wanted to thank Ms. Karen Wilkerson and Ms. Shirley Layton for leading the charge on getting us going for that and planning it. It was outstanding, and it was so great to have all of these dedicated, diehard people that serve in the Democratic Party to be able to come. We actually had Ken Scudder, who is the vice financial chair for the Texas Democratic Party. And so he came and spoke with us and did an outstanding job. It's always great to have him back in East Texas because he is an East Texan. So it was great to have him to come. And then I want to send our condolences out to some very dear friends. First of all, Patricia Francis, who actually is one of the precinct chairs for the Democratic Party here in Smith County. And she lost her mother, who happens to be family members of mine. And so that funeral was on Saturday. And once again, people did not let the rain stop them. They came out to support those families. And so secondly was the brother of one of our dear, dear friends as well. And that is a former football player. He's actually the president of the retired NFL players, and that is Mr. Gary Baxter Jr. His brother passed away, young brother, and so that service was packed as well, held there at Ralph Caraway Jr.'s church, the St. Mary's Baptist Church. And so so we just want to offer our condolences to all of those people who have lost loved ones. It's always a difficult time when you lose family members, brothers, sisters, mothers in particular. And so we just say that from Marvelous Monday, we want to say that our prayers are with you, and we thank thank you for stepping up out there and supporting those families and so forth. So now let's find out who is on with me. We've kind of got our housekeeping out of the way, and we want to find out who's there. Let's see. Who's Dr. Hagney, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. Welcome home, Dr. Hagney.
Oh, it is a blessing. It is a blessing.
Yes, it is. You sound very good, very strong. It's just great to great to have you on back in front row center with us tonight. We've missed you, and you always come with a wealth of information when you come. Would you like to bring us up to date on the organizations and the things that you're working on in the community while we're waiting for the rest of the team members to come on and join us? And then we have a couple of special guests that we have invited to come. And so preferably one of them did respond and said that they're out and in the community. This is election time, you know, and we're just right close, and we're going to get into that part a little bit later on. But bring us up to date on what you've been working with and what's going on for you.
Well, I tell you, it's truly been a blessing. God is awesome. God is amazing. You know, our healthcare task force, we've gone for our fourth year now with our church hubs. This has been amazing what has happened. You know, we have documented that we can actually rural communities, we can actually reach the rural communities of color in North and Southeast Texas, which has been a problem with a lot of organizations and groups. And also, we can we have documented we can actually match the resource with that need. And because of that, we, of course, our major focus has been prostate cancer and mental health. And I tell you, we have really been in the trenches, and just you know, it's eye-opening to think about what's occurring. You mentioned the funeral that's occurring and the long-time survival of the individual. But it has been, the blessing has been recently, you know, of course, we partnered with the entire UT system affiliations with all our schools, med school, graduate school, all of the nursing schools. And it was a blessing to work with the medical students on a project where they were actually focused on developing a flyer for prostate cancer and also a survey. But sitting there the other day, listening to all these presentations from these God-gifted medical students who are in East Texas and the project they partnered out in the community was just amazing. It was refreshing to hear young resource voices. You know, in other words, voices that are going to be taking our spots in the future. So that was very impressive to hear all their presentations. And we were very excited about the prostate one. Once they complete it, that's going to develop as we reach out into community and a couple of projects, radio and a couple of them I want to mention. But that's going to be an excellent partnership. But also we have found that in our work with these prostate projects, the significant role of the survivors really started to home in church with all these young guys in Tenahaw, where we had that a couple of years ago. But we've recognized what we're doing now, identifying prostates of one gentleman from your church and one that include the prostate survivors in discussing prostate cancer. You know, we could talk about the medical training and scientific component, but it's just amazing to hear the gentlemen who've been down that path and going down that path for them to speak. And I tell you, it's just been amazing to hear them and involving them. With that, we want to identify hopefully all the prostate survivors throughout Northeast Texas, where they can come together to just interact and tell their story. And when we talk about survival, we all talk about the family moment. We talk about the wives, the role the wives play with their husbands. And I just want to thank Tenahaw for leading all the projects we've been doing. That, of course, I guess I have to put in here also on the news that we always talk about COVID. One of the recent reports that long-term COVID is a major problem.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, what can we say? We've been talking about this about 4 years, and some people assume COVID was gone. And, you know, we always talk about the safe distance. But COVID hasn't gone any place. The major problem now is long-term COVID. There was a special couple of weeks ago, individual was suffering from long-term COVID. And what the government must do is develop a program to assist these individuals. Because the diagnosis and the treatment is working, but there needs to be more focus on these individuals because the complications they're experiencing is unacceptable. So we need to relook at that. Now, put some money into looking at COVID. How you treat a person who's suffering from long term COVID, and also how to identify it, because that's a problem with the diagnosis, as you well know. Health clinics, but you know, we have these health fairs. Not only reaching the trust in America is in the black church and the black pastor, and that's how we reach. We had a program this past weekend at Seminary High. They videoed it. I'm gonna get you a copy of it. You're talking about how men should be men. It was amazing. Discussion, the presentations. And also the role of the male need to that was discussed. There is a copy I want to get to you of identifying the interesting stats about a black household, how many husband wives in there, how many single parents, and all that. It is a major problem. The educational components, the birth, it's all across the board. And as they were saying the other day, we are doing very little to change those numbers, but we have to continue to reach the communities of the rural communities. And so we're very excited about that. And also there's a need. Texas has a lot of money for broadband, but the major issue and major need is in the rural communities. See, there's a blessing the state and other people getting to recognize and say, we have a problem in rural areas. You know, you see all the reports, everything's going good in the big cities and all that. We have an organization now and say, hey, we need help to get to these rural communities, particularly these rural communities of color. And so that's you'll hear more about that because we saw this when we trying to reach in the community. We may assume churches have internet, they understand internet, they don't.
That's right.
And that's going to be a major problem. And we're working on a program to work with churches at 20 hubs to work with them to reach those communities. And another program we work with is Christian Women Job Corps. They've been around for several years, and we now have a branch here in Cherokee County. But they're covering all of these issues. So I got that something else I'll listen to. So you see, I've been busy in all these areas.
Yes, you've been busy,
areas,
and I like
but,
that. Right.
Yes.
So Dr. Hagney, So Dr. Hagney, let before we move from this subject, if you can address the importance of men getting that PSA on a regular basis, and if they can do it early when they see some type of symptoms that they may be having. We know that we just lost O.J. Simpson for prostate with prostate cancer, and so that early screening, if you can just address that a little bit, because sometimes that will help detect prostate cancer early if they do that screening. Can you address the PSA a little bit and how important?
Yes, that's very important, because that was one of the major discussions this past weekend. You know, as you know, oncology and cancer, you know, earlier we diagnose someone with cancer, it's almost all the cancers. The problem in our community, majority of cancer diagnosed in the latter stage, mainly to a certain extent the stage when it's all spread. That's so critical in prostate cancer. It is unacceptable that black males die twice as white males with prostate cancer, and even the diagnosis and everything. When we look at the early significance of the earlier diagnosis, I know we have to deal with the discussions about do I need to die, but by identifying prostate cancer early with the PSA test, that can stage an individual. We know exactly the therapy, the treatment, and everything. Because within the last 2 weeks, I've had one gentleman on board, another gentleman been diagnosed with prostate cancer. But when you think about the significance about that, when you diagnose it earlier, you change the death rates. See, we've seen the death rates now, majority of individuals did not get the PSA test or they got it late. I know there was some concern. We talked about this weekend, black males, and one of the gentlemen who that's a major plus of having prostate survivors on these speaking programs. As one of the guys said, you know, both of these guys have been surviving 10 and 30 years with prostate cancer. But when now a normal person hears prostate cancer, they think it's immediate death. And the reason why that's the case is because they are so late in that testing. Another important factor is the age process. Now, in particular African American, we're looking at 40 to maybe if you have prostate cancer in your family, your physician should order a PSA test at 40. You know, the national group is men saying 45 and 50. But see, also the physician play a role. If you're a black male and you're 45 and above, your physician had our PSA test, you need to ask the physician a question. But again, that not saying, like the gentleman said Saturday, by not saying and letting people know, that's where we see all these death stats. And the guy asked the question about OJ. He said, you know, he had the resources to pay and get the test done. Why did that occur with him, with all the resources test?
Right, and I'm going to tell you this, Dr. Hagney. You know, they recommend, and I was reading some of the material on prostate cancer and they recommend that men from ages 55 to 69 and then after that, they recommend a person at age 70, and we know O.J. Simpson was, 76, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Once they reach the age of about 70, they're saying don't even do the testing of PSA anymore. Then they said something like it's not even as effective. And the survival benefit for treatment is minimal, I believe is what they said. Go ahead.
See, prostate cancer is going to be one of those cancers that we're going to talk from the black perspective.
Okay.
You know, if you're talking about 50 years of old, you're not talking about black males. And that's the national group. Now, we need people on the national group who really need to speak out. Because prostate cancer is 50 and is not for black males. Prostate cancer should be down 45 for black males. Another point, if you have a history, if you have a family history of prostate cancer, when I speak this past week, and his great-grandfather died from prostate cancer, he has prostate cancer, and two or three of his younger siblings also have been diagnosed. So if you're a black family, black male, genetically, if you have prostate cancer in your history, that's why family history is so important. If you have prostate cancer in your family history, your grandfather, whatever, every black male in that family tree need to be tested for prostate cancer starting at 40.
Okay.
And see, another thing, when they get into talking about the age 70s and everything, That's getting over the clinical different stages of prostate cancers. Sure, they'll tell you there are different prostate cancers. Some are very active and very long term. So individuals get discovered. That's slow growing. There's the other aggressive one. So you don't want to deal with that. You don't want to be playing guessing with that because they're guessing with your life. So what is a PSA test? You know, what's the cost to do the test? Just go to do the test. Right. Then you're ahead of the discussion, the game, and also the treatment. But, yes, that's where we are. Prostate cancer is going to be a cancer that we will have to develop the guidelines for black males without a shadow of a doubt.
Very good. Good point. Thank you so much for that, Dr.
Thanks.
For bringing us up today. Okay, and I think we have Mr. Arthur on. Mr. Arthur, are you there?
How y'all doing?
Hello.
We're great. How are you? Welcome home. It's great I was telling everybody it's great to be right back here on Monday on time, on schedule at 8 o'clock. It was great to be on with the rest of you on schedule because I have been tied up for the last long time, not getting here until about 8:30, 8:40. So tell us, bring us up today, Mr. Arthur, and what's going on in your world. Mr. Arthur has always kept us, Dr. Hagney, as you know, up to date on what is going on in Niger. We're going to get to that a little bit later on into the show. Mr. Arthur, we have actually invited a couple of candidates to come on. I also sent out a message to Dr. Carr to see if he was available to come on, and hopefully Pastor Cooper will be. I don't know if he has activities going on tonight or not, but as you know, we're getting into election season for city government, and of course, then in November for federal government, and so we want to make sure that people are prepared, people understand the importance of getting out to the polls to vote. It's just very serious. But Mr. Arthur, bring us up to date on what's going on in Dallas, Texas.
Well, like I said, voting, just like, you know, all over Texas. So basically, of course, I'm seeing people putting up the signs now, so now it's serious. So, you know, we're going to see what, you know, this pretty much a runoff period, folks running off.
Yes. As a matter of fact, the skinny of it here in Tyler, Texas, is that they're thinking that we will have a runoff in that city council election for District 2. That's going on our councilman. And let me just mention also Councilman Broderick McGee, who is the councilman for District 2. He's finalizing his final term ending in May, and he lost his son. Also, that funeral was not this Saturday, but the following Saturday, prior to this past Saturday. And his son was a veteran. So we were with him tonight. We actually was working on commercials. We were on the rooftop downtown Tyler at 111. That's an event center. That's downtown Tyler. And so we were on top of the roof cutting our commercials. And tomorrow I'll be back on the roof for at Jun-Souls. Jun-Souls makes the chicken. You probably see it in your supermarket all across everywhere, to include in Dallas and Houston and Fort Worth and all over Texas. And I don't know if he goes outside of Texas or not, but he is now part of my district because we annexed all of that area into the city of Tyler, even though it's out on and of course, Dr. Hagney would know that's out on Highway 14, and it's probably about, 5 miles outside or so of Tyler, but now it is part of my district because we've annexed and we provide water supply and everything for them. So I will be on top of his roof cutting my commercials for District 3. But go ahead, Ms. Arthur.
Was on the roof this evening, just
got in from being on the roof downtown Tyler. All of us and the mayor was there, and so the focus was that Tyler, Texas is.
No,
go ahead.
Just tell me what on the roof is. But he keeps saying on the roof. I'm trying to figure, is that a place? Is that a club?
No.
Eatery.
So you know what a roof is, right?
I think he's playing with you.
on top of the roof of an event center downtown Tyler, Texas, top of the roof. Literally on top of the roof of a building. Okay. And tomorrow at 11 o'clock, I will be on top of the roof of John Soul's. It's a large, one of our large industries here in Tyler that he employs lots of people up there. Mr. Arthur, I will have on my pink construction hat. And I will be in their construction zone. They're adding and they're building more out there. So I'll be in the construction zone during my commercial for the state of the city.
May I make a comment about this?
Go right ahead, Dr. Hagman.
On UT campus, if I get it correct, the John Soul building is a business complex. I tell you, if you're in Tyler, it's heartwarming. You mentioned that you're going to hate them. It's heartwarming to see the commitment of individual, I'm going to go ahead, who have money, what they're putting into the health complex.
In other words, Arthur, what Dr. Hagney is saying is that at University of Texas at Tyler, there's a John Soul's business, College of Business, and that structure was built with the money from John Soul's food.
Correct.
That tells you how major that corporation is, and it sits in my district. But District 6 is where the University of Texas sits. And by the way, we want to, speaking of University of Texas, Dr. Hagney and Mr. Arthur, we want to congratulate Dr. Kurt Calhoun, and I hate to see him leave. He has been amazing. He's given us 22 years here in this city. He is the president of the University of Texas system, and that includes the University of Texas, the hospital, the medical school. I proudly serve on that board, the Hospital Foundation Board, thanks to Dr. Kurt Calhoun. And Dr. Julie Pulley, Philly, which I believe is going to be able to take that position. I believe she's the number one choice. We don't have to go outside of our community. We have qualified people right here. And so Dr. Kurt Calhoun put me on the board to hire, it was eight of us, to hire the dean of the College of Medicine, and I proudly was one of those eight that hired Dr. Wiggum Willis, who is the dean of the medical school. But I wanted to see Dr. Calhoun stay here until the new building of the medical school. But he's already opened the medical school because the medical school now is out there on Highway 271 at the College of Health. Out there on that campus, but the building is being built right there in the hospital district, so that the physicians, the medical students, all they have to do is walk from one area to the next area. We got that. That is our actual hospital district. So he has done outstanding. He has run the whole East Texas University of Texas system. That's the ambulatory clinics, 60-plus ambulatory clinics all over East Texas, all of the university out there in, I believe it's Palestine or one of the cities out
UT
there.
System.
Right. Yeah. The whole UT system of East Texas. He's been the chief of that, and he's done outstanding. He's made Texas the medical capital.
Yes. You know, another significant point of his position is understanding the needs of East Texas. That's why the medical school is here. But he just recently appointed the dean of the School of Nursing to the state committee on identifying and working with increasing the number of nurses.
And a building a new college of nursing on that campus as well. Got tons of money, and that building is going up as well. And that's where I got my master's in nursing from out there at University of Texas at Tyler. Great medical. We're rated number 10, I believe it is, for nursing in the country.
so outstanding.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for bringing that up, Dr. Agnew. Outstanding. Outstanding.
Yeah. Thank you.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Okay. Well, let's see. I believe that we have someone in that can join us, one of the candidates for City Council District 2, and I believe we just got a text message from her, and I believe our engineer has opened up her line so that she can come in and speak to us. We also invited, she says, okay, I can join for about 30 minutes. And so we want to welcome her to Marvelous Monday. Her name is Ms. Petra Hawkins, and she is one of the candidates for District 2 for City Council. And so we want to welcome her to the show. And, ma'am, are you there? Can you hear us?
I'm here.
Yes, thank you. We want to, first of all, say thank you for joining us. We want to make sure that people all around Tyler and Smith County community knows exactly who these candidates are and what they represent, what they stand for. And so we say welcome to our show. This is Marvelous Monday. We've been in existence for a very, very long time. Here on this network on Monday night. We are broadcast out of Houston, Texas, but we're all over East Texas, and particularly one of our primary areas is, of course, Tyler, Texas. So we thank you for joining us tonight. We have on our show, we have Mr. Arthur Flemings out of Dallas, Texas. We have Dr. Hagney, Richard Hagney out of Tyler, Texas. And, of course, I think, Dr. Hagney, you may have seen signs by Ms. Petra Hawkins. And then, of course, we have a pastor out of Beaumont, Texas, Pastor Michael Cooper, who actually ran for a governor at one time. And then we have also Dr. Odell Carr out of Arkansas, who actually is running for state representative out there in Arkansas. So that's our lineup. And then we have Peggles out of, I almost drew a blank right there. She is out, she's originally from Texas. I cannot believe that. She's my daughter. How can I go blank? But she's in Kentucky. And so we have a wide range of information that comes from all aspects of our community, our state of Texas, as well as the United States, brought right here every Monday from 8 until 10. So we're going to open up, and we're going to ask you a couple of questions. Ms. Petra, you can tell us a little bit about yourself before we do that. Tell us who you are and a little bit about yourself, and then we'll have a couple of questions for you. And we appreciate your coming and joining us tonight. Go right ahead.
All right. Thank you for inviting me. Hello, everyone.
Sure.
This is Petra Hawkins, and I am a Tyler Wright, born and raised. Been here my entire life. Attended Tyler ISD schools. Graduated from John Tyler High School in '89, and then I attended Tyler Junior College, and I got my certificate of proficiency in nursing in '92, and I transitioned to RN in '98. So I've been in healthcare over 32 years. Been married 28 years, have 3 grown children, 10 grandchildren, and here I am running for city council. Been in healthcare that long, and then I got my real estate license less than 2 years ago, and so now I'm running for city council, which is, it's been interesting, very interesting, but I'm enjoying it. I'm learning a lot.
Very good, very good. Okay, well, we appreciate that. We always want to commend anyone that steps up and steps out to run for a public office. It's a lot of work involved, and you have to have that passion to be able to do that. So we appreciate the fact that you have that passion. So we want you to tell us exactly why you feel, and if you feel, that you are the best candidate for this position. And we've seen her everywhere. We've seen her signs everywhere. I see them all in my district. So she's been out there everywhere putting her signs out and getting to know the community. And I thank her for being in healthcare. Obviously, Dr. Hagney is from healthcare. Ms. Petra, mm-hmm. he's a pharmacist. And then, of course, you know that I'm from healthcare. So, and Mr. Mm-hmm. Arthur is education and healthcare. As a matter of fact, he has been an administrator in a nursing home facility, for quite some time. So we have a wide range of educators and all kinds positions and careers that come and work on this network. So tell us why you think you're the best person for that position.
So I guess we all have one common thing, and we all, it's a people. We care about people. We have a compassion for people, passion for people, and that's one of my main reasons. I feel that healthcare has pretty much groomed me. I love taking care of people, helping in any capacity that I can. And this is just, it gives me a larger scale, a different platform to be able to help people, especially in my hometown. Again, I'm from here. I was raised in St. Louis as a young girl, and then we moved around a little bit. I was in North Tyler, and then when I graduated from high school, I was living in White City. So these are the primary areas that make up District 2. So I want to be able to help my community. There's a lot of, I'm just using the terminology that the citizens have used, and they feel like they've been neglected. Their voices have gone, or their complaints have gone upon deaf ears. And so I'm very passionate about speaking up for people, being an advocate for people that are less fortunate. And I believe in, I've been a problem solver. I've been in management. I've been health supervisor, team lead, you know, those type things. So I'm good at solving problems. I think quickly on my feet, and I know how to speak to people. I know how to gain resources and get things done. So those are some of the main reasons, you know, just because I'm more empathetic. I'm from here. I understand, you know, the necessity, the importance also of maintaining this district, because it's a historic district that was set up for African-Americans, and there's only two seats in city council right now. And if we lose one, it will be that much easier for, you know, to lose the other one. So we don't want to lose our representation. And so I feel like I'm that person that's going to fight harder. And I think that I've been proving that, because I've been, I've been burning the midnight oil.
Okay. So on day one, when you take the position, you mentioned the fact that citizens have spoken with you concerning issues that they have not been heard, deaf ear. So on day one, what is it that in particular that you would like to see and do differently that has not been done previously in District 2?
Well, I have been addressing some of the issues already about the dilapidated homes. You know, they pose a health hazard because some of them are open up. They're not boarded up like they're supposed to be. There's rodents in there. There's homeless people going in there. There's drug addicts going in there. They're leaving drug paraphernalia all around. And it's dangerous for our kids that are walking to school past some of these properties. So I've already been speaking with code enforcement about it. They've already been out retagging those houses, contacting the owners, or attempting to contact the owners of the houses. And then they explained to me the 30, 60, and 90-day rule and the process of how they, you know, eventually will get those houses torn down or either convince the property owners to maybe sell them to some developers or something like that. But I've already been working on those things.
Okay, very good. So since these kinds of things have kind of been done, I know that putting a tag on is like putting a Band-Aid, so to speak.
Right.
And so exactly. So how do you plan to, are you going to reach out to some of these families as an individual? Or tell us a little bit more about how we can solve that problem and how we can work on that homelessness. Because as you know, as you probably know, that the federal government has issued down to the cities across the nation to get rid of their homelessness. And as you probably also already know, for 10 years that we were under the bridge feeding the homeless and trying to work on getting them out. And so now there's a sign up that will not allow them to cross on that territory, which they call under the bridge, to continue the homelessness. So they're scattered everywhere. Do you think that we can find some kind of, or do you have some kind of idea how you would like to go and help the homeless issues? Because that is a very serious issue that we have here in our city, to include veterans. We have about 50 homeless veterans that are here. We have about 300 homeless people that we know about that are documented. And then the other thing is, and I know this is another issue, it's not really a city issue, but it is a city issue, and that's the mental illness that we see out there in the community with homeless, because homeless has been worked on for a long time, and it's difficult to get all of those people off the street. Some of the people don't want to get off the street. Do you have some other suggestions of how we may handle that? And then we'll turn it over to our two others that are on. They may have a couple of questions that they'd like to ask you. Go ahead. Any other suggestions?
So I have met with Larry Everett and forget the other guy's name. I think his last name is Butler at Neighborhood Services.
Mm-hmm.
I met with him at their
Prince
office.
Butler.
And then, okay, yes, that's his name, Prince Butler. And then I met with them again when they were at St. Louis last week. And so they have a program, actually, that they're working on. It will begin in October of 2025. It's a five-year program, and the homelessness is included in that plan. I've also spoken with PATH, Habitat for Humanity. So PATH has a program. They will house them for up to either 6 to 9 weeks. So they don't still have enough housing. So they're working with the neighborhood services and also Habitat for Humanity. I also go to Ethan. That's the East Texas Human Needs Network with Ms. Jackie Clay. Mm-hmm. She has a lot of nonprofits under her umbrella, BCFS, Highway 80. So I meet with them every month. We meet on the at First Baptist over there on Broadway and Malouk. And so that's what we do. We meet and we break out, and there's like 10 of us. And so we're getting together, and we're brainstorming, and we're coming up with things. We're getting ready to have a forum where we're going to invite some of the city council members and the mayor and other people in the community to try to come up with a plan, you know, working with the city, working with PATH, and to try to get some of these people off of the streets. Because what's been happening is the reason why these people are under the bridge is because we have all these organizations going down there, and they're taking the blankets, and they're feeding the dogs. And so, you know, they're comfortable down there. So that's what we have to stop, you know, these organizations going down there doing that. But there are things in place. I've been meeting with these people that have already been meeting prior to me meeting with them. So there are plans in place. It just takes time to get those plans up. Truthfully, we don't have enough shelter, even at the Salvation Army. I've met with them also to house these people. So I don't know what the city is planning on doing. If they're going to, you know, put an ordinance out, I don't know where they're going to put the people.
Yeah, the ordinance is out already. Yes, the ordinance is out, and we actually have been working with, just a second, Ms. Arthur, we've been working with Highway 80. There's a facility, a few facilities. There is structure. There is actually housing that people can be placed in. The issue, once again, is that how are we going to convince people to come off the streets, because there's plenty of the people who actually are comfortable with living in the streets, unfortunately, and that's the issue that I was speaking about with the mental illness. Because some of these, all these things have been in place for a very long time. All these organizations, prior council people have worked at this, and so we have to figure out how we can handle and deal with the mental illness that we know that exists with people, some people who are out there homeless. Mr. Arthur, go right ahead with your question.
Congratulations on the campaign. Wish you best of luck. But here are two questions. I heard you say the word now, and I'm just going to talk about the experience up here in Dallas. When you say, well, you know, we got all these homes, you know, these houses, we're going to get code to come out with them, and then we're going to see if we can get some developers, quote, developers. Now, up here, when you say that, up here, we think gentrification. And so.
Exactly. That's right. And the same thing down here, but go ahead.
Yeah. Say develop. You're thinking in terms of community people coming together or trying to fix them up for some of these folks that want to live in some of these homeless people can live in some of those houses, y'all fix them up. So I'm hoping that's what. You know, I hope that's what you do. Now, that homeless plan that y'all are talking about sounds like the one up here. And basically, what's been happening is y'all been moving from wherever they're at right now to somewhere else. And so, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you say they bring in food and they're feeding the dog, it's kind of like, in the forest, they say don't feed animals. And so, I like to hear a more holistic plan. You know, yeah, we got the mental illness. Okay, what you going to do about that? Are you going to get the governor to actually put some of that mental health money back that he took out, $200 million? So it sounds like to me, you know, folks going to come together. Y'all going to have this great conversation. And then y'all going to move the chairs around on the deck on the Titanic. And then you're going to watch this. You got the same problem.
Well, I come from a different background because Oh, no, I was just going to say that when I was speaking of that, I wasn't saying that I agree with it. I think that it's putting a Band-Aid on it, and I think that a lot of these organizations are getting great tax write-offs for doing those things, because it's all of a sudden everybody wants to go under the bridge. But, that's I think that's why when I am in the seat that it'll be – and I know Dr. McKellar is also she's a – all these other things too, but I'm still very much so involved in healthcare. And so I won't just sit at the table and, you know, agree with some of the things that they've been doing prior. I'll be pushing for more aggressive, doing something about it, not just talking about it. And so that's why I attend the Eastern workshops, because we're actually, you know, getting people together, and we're inviting other organizations that are doing things in other cities, and they are moving their homeless around and getting them housed, but it's not permanent housing. Because, like she was saying, a lot of them are mentally ill. A lot of them are veterans. And I've spoken with them. I've been over to the Camp V, and I've taken a tour of the women's building and the entire facility. So the resources are here, but there's still not a lot of housing. It's not enough housing. We do have housing for them, temporary housing. It's not permanent.
And Ms. Arthur, I'm going to jump in for just a second on a Camp V. I'm glad she mentioned that, which I proudly serve on that board. We just got funding that we're going to build some tiny homes, and a perfect example of what tiny home community could look like, because we talked about doing some tiny homes several years back on that, is Austin, Texas. But what I like, I attended a summit two Saturdays ago, with the NARAB, the East Texas Real Estate List, that put on that conference. And what they came up with, and I love this, is what to do with Big Mama's house. And there's funding out there, and that's some of the funding that Ms. Petra was talking about that actually is filtered down. That's the federal side of the house. Coming down to the state, and then the state is going to pass it down to the cities so that we can build more affordable homes. And then the other thing is that all these years we've been giving vouchers and people renting, and so now the new thing from the feds is that people and ownership. So we will stop paying rent every single month, but people owning their property. Go ahead, Mr. Arthur.
Well, let's say this.
Go ahead.
And then Dr. Talk. But my concern is that the city of Tyler, whoever y'all working with, is going to go and pick a fight with the folks that's helping the homeless. And then like once that fight starts, that ain't going to help nobody. And so I'm saying
I'm not for that, Mr. Arthur. I mean, it's just like my father used to say, if you see somebody out there that needs food, you give them food. And so I'm not going to stop. I mean, I did that for 10 years when I retired out of the military and came home and saw all those homeless people under that bridge and saw veterans under that bridge. We immediately started bringing clothing and food and everything, but there were some people under that bridge said, I don't want your handouts, I don't need it,
and get
away. And those were veterans that did that.
Right.
And I don't care that I had my uniform on and going out there, they didn't want any parts of it. Now, I think Dr. Hagney, we're going to bring him in. I think Pastor Cooper is on now. Hey, hello, Pastor Cooper, because our candidate has to leave at a certain period of time. So let's go to Dr. Hagney first. Dr. Hagney, you have a question for Ms. Petra?
I just saw a question and also information. Of course, I'm interested in the rural areas. The question I want to ask you, you didn't mention the black churches in your plan. And then the other component part is the octopus plan. And also, actually, a question, have you read the healthcare status of Northeast Texas that University of Texas put together over the last 3 or 4 years?
I have not.
I would strongly recommend for anybody running any office in East Texas to read the UT report over the last 7 years. And it's going to be very interesting that what you're going to see in that report. One of the communities is always represented on the bottom of the line, and the reason why that's the case is that they're not included in the first part of the study. And so when you look at that, you'll see East Texas is basically a failure when you look at total health areas. And I mentioned the Black Church. The success we've had last 4 years reaching out in these areas is through the Black Church. The Black Church has historically been the resource center in our community. And the lack of utilizing the Black Church, you also lack reaching the individual in the community. Trust in America is not in the trust in America is in the Black Church. I know they're all, I'm not talking about across the board, but individuals respond to what the pastor and the church is requesting. We are very blessed. You have some very dynamic Black churches in town. We work with some of them on some projects. I would highly recommend that you look at and focus with the Black churches reach the community. The other problem everybody is having, nobody really understands the octopus plan. You mentioned, see, an octopus plan, you cannot stop an octopus because it has multiple legs. You can't stop an octopus by attacking one leg. All these programs talk about addressing one leg. There have been millions and millions of dollars spent in Northeast Texas and Tyler trying to solve the problem you were talking about. Those million, I work a lot of these groups in. Those millions are going to be continually wasted in East Texas because you're going to continue to see the results in that UT study. What you need to do, understand the octopus plan, or the octopus plan, when you address all the problems simultaneously. If a person living on a bridge, you have to address why he or she likes standing on that bridge. And all those component parts, the mental health issue. The state of Texas they're working on understanding the mental health needs of a lot of that resident, particularly those in East Texas. You have to ask people sometime what are their needs. So I would highly recommend you understand the octopus plan and also the role of the Black Church to solve a majority of the problems that exist. Until those are linked in, are we going to continue to see millions of dollars wasted, and the results going to be the same results that the UT study is showing.
Okay, so Dr. Hammond,
that's my comment. I can talk later on about that.
Right. No worries. Let me jump in just for a little hot second on that issue now. I want candidates to be well-rounded in their knowledge, but I also want the candidate to know and focus on what the function is of Ms. Fetcher. What do you see the function of a city council member to be? Because we want to make sure that she gets all of that in her head as to what a city council member should do. We got the federal, and we got a state, and we got local. What do you see the function of a city council member is?
Well, from attending the city council meetings, I see that, I see a lot of the permitting issues coming in, and I see some personal things as far as this person's on my property, this and that, or whatever. But I also have met with different individuals. Like I said, I've met with, Ed, I've met with city manager, I've met with the mayor, I've met with the police department, I've met with the fire chief, and then just different areas, neighborhood services. I've spoken with the municipal court judge. So I know city council has their particular roles as far as, and when you work with all of the departments, I get that, but I still feel like city council, a person individually, you have to have your own initiatives outside of that, because people are going to be calling you for so many different things. And I want to just be able to provide the resources, not just personally going out.
Refer,
those resources.
Right. Because, and the reason why I brought that up, because the primary duty of a city council, the function is policy making for the city government. We make policy for the government. We determine the overall goals and objectives. So even though it's important what Dr. Hagney is saying, but we got to make sure that our candidate knows exactly what her primary duty would be if, in fact, she's blessed to be able to get that position, and that is policy making for city government. Let's go to let's go over to Pastor Cooper. Pastor Cooper, come in, and if you'd like to ask our candidate a question, because she has to leave shortly.
No, that's fine. And because I got on late because I was in those city meetings you're talking about. and yes. trying to get to know what's going on in our city. So I have four.
And Ms. Tetra, he's from Beaumont. He's from Beaumont, Texas. Go ahead, Tetra.
Beaumont. Okay. Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
My pleasure. So what office are you running for, and what's your stance? What's your platform?
I'm running for city council. And my number one initiative on my platform, because this is East Texas, I don't know how familiar you are with it, is unity
he
and collaboration.
He lives in East Texas, but go ahead.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, yeah.
In East Texas. Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Well, so you know a little bit about what I'm going to say then. Is unity and collaboration, and a lot of that is amongst our own people, but citywide as a whole, because I don't feel like we can get anything accomplished if we're all on different pages. So we're going to have to get on one page. And that's why I like attending the Ethan workshops. It does reference the Octopus Plan that he was speaking of, because like we break out in different, there's about 50 people in there. And so then we break out in these sessions. So I always attend the housing or either the mental health side of it, but they have transportation, they have food, they have all different, probably like 8 different areas that we break out into. So they're all discussing different things, and then we come back together in the end. So we're doing something a little similar on that. But, again, the unity and collaboration, safety, that's what I was talking about, the dilapidated homes, the safety of the children walking to school and these, you know, drug addicts in there and rodents and things like that, and they have access to going into some of these houses. And we do have some of these houses being torn down. We have some of the owners are actually selling the houses, and people are coming in and building. So that's good. I'm passionate about the youth. We have an issue with vaping here in town, a huge issue. So I've also spoken with Dr. Marty Crawford. He's the superintendent. And so city council did actually get together. And Dr. McKellar, you can probably tell them a little bit more about that, the ordinance that's in place now regarding the vape shops.
Right.
So we're
right.
looking at
yeah.
that.
Even though now we're talking about the Board of Education. So that's where Artist Newsom comes in. That's where our other, we have a black female that's on that as well, and several others. But
right.
another thing that we as city council will do is we order elections, like her election that she's getting ready to run for, we order that. And then we levy taxes, and then we that public improvement that she's talking about, we do that. We approve contracts. So and then, of course, the traffic issues, and we've worked tremendously on the traffic mm-hmm. issues. We have an amazing traffic engineer and I suggest to everybody, whomever comes in, I suggested that everybody that's interested in running for a public office, Pastor Cooper can attest to this. We went to campaign schools to learn, and then I wanted so much to be totally prepared for this seat that I went back and got my degrees in political science because it had been a long time since I sat in a classroom studying government and our social issues and everything. And so looking at and being able to differentiate from the federal side to the state side to the local side, which is a vast difference. But what the one thing I like what Ms. Kestra said is the collaboration, and the collaboration that I'm talking about is collaborating with the county, which we didn't see that much happening in city government here in Tyler, Texas. But now we collaborate with the county, and we collaborate with the school board, and we collaborate with the state level, and then we collaborate with Nathaniel Moran, who is on the federal level. So because we're mm-hmm. all working for the same greater good, because all politics are local, right? I'll give it back to you, Pastor Cooper, and then we're going to let Ms. Petra have her final comments or her stump speech, and then we'll let her go. And we appreciate you coming to join us tonight. Go ahead, Pastor
Thank
Cooper.
Absolutely. So real quick, are you running for at large, or are you in a particular ward? Or?
Tell him what you're running for, because he came in on the end. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, okay. So we have 6 districts here. So I'm running for District 2, which is historically the district was designed for or set up for so the blacks could have representation. So we have two seats.
Right.
The other seat is Dr. McCullers, and so I'm
and
from
she's
Tyler.
The city council, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, city council for this area,
right.
Yes, sir.
So you're running against an incumbent, or this is a seat that's up for grabs? Or?
It's up for grabs. Yeah, we actually have one of my classmates, and then there's another a white guy that's running. He's from Houston. He's been here about 9 years. He's a developer.
That's fun.
It's really not good for us because it has created a very peculiar situation where the blacks end up splitting the vote, and we could, we have a risk of losing the seat to the white guy if we don't get out and back one candidate. That, we kind of are in a pickle right now.
And the reason she's using that terminology, I want to say that because we don't want anybody. Any of our listeners. We've got lots of listeners all around the world that's listening. We're into military installations everywhere. We want people to think that we're racist, but when we use the terminology, so I wanted to clarify.
Yeah, talking about
right, and I know you understand where I'm coming from with that. So
I was going to break it down, but go ahead.
Our ancestors fought that we would have seats at the table downtown because our community was all African Americans. North Tyler was all African Americans, and then of course West Tyler, which is my district and Broderick McGee's district runs together. We're Northwest Tyler. So we marry up at each other out there on the west side right now. And so because our ancestors fought that we would have a seat at the table because it was all – we didn't want to have people who did not understand the thought process of African Americans running our districts because that's who all live there. So that's how our ancestors were able to get that seat for us. And what Ms. Petra is saying is that we don't want to lose that seat because African Americans have utilized that seat ever since our ancestors fought that we'd get that. And Gladys Square, the late Gladys Square, which was my sorority sister and relative, was the first black to hold the seat at city council in District 3.
Real quick, I'm going to direct this to Coop. Hey, Coop, don't that sound kind of like what happened in Beaumont?
Yes, that's exactly what happened in Beaumont.
Because, again, and that's where we got to come together and, not let that happen. But anyway, just briefly, tell me what happened in Beaumont right quick.
No, it's the same thing, and a lot of people get stuck in the rut on what's available to us and not realizing. Not only that, is that we want the best candidates to win. Like Dr.
McKellar was
saying, is that is it about black and white? No, it's about the best candidates for that region, that district, that area. That's the reason why we have that set up. And then people get stuck on those issues and lose sight of what we need to be fighting for. And so we need the best candidates to represent the people from that area. And we have other candidates, including the mayor out here, same thing. So we lost representation on city council because we lost the first African-American female mayor because they split the ticket when folks were running, like what you're saying. Same thing with city council and myself when they begged me to run, but yet we run to the sideline and don't vote, don't show up because we don't understand.
Right.
So I love what Dr. McKellar said earlier is that you must continue to educate yourself. I knew long years ago that I would end up in politics, so that's the reason why I have a minor in social studies. Of course, I have a master's in psychology, of course, but I still was going back and looking at those core courses that would help me understand people, socioeconomic issues, and those things. And so all politics, like you said, is local, and it's the most important. I love what Bill Clinton said years ago. He said, man, being president is the worst job in the world. He said, I really can't help you. He said it. He admitted it. He said, but you need to go vote for your city councilman or woman. That's where the rubber meets the road. Right there.
There you go.
That's what makes the difference.
Right there.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is
That's all I'm saying.
And we got to be well versed. And let me just tell you what else that we're having to deal with. As Ms. Petra said, we don't want to lose that area. But here's what we also know has happened during when we sat down and we drew out lines. That city council district 2 now goes way out south and has picked up a lot of other ethnicities in that district. We know how that goes. Yeah.
It doesn't
look the same when our ancestors fought. Even my district does not look the same because we have a large amount of Hispanics that live in District 3, and then we have a small number of Caucasians that live in District 3. In other words, all I'm saying is that our city, because it is growing tremendously and it's spread out everywhere, it doesn't look the same as it did when our ancestors thought that we would have District 2 and 3. Go ahead.
And that's why, as you're a young politician, as we go forward, hey, y'all, we got to have those conversations because, see, games is going to be played. And if we have those conversations, about that, or either educate the community about the game that's going to be played. Like when they redrew that district, then they created this game.
And that's when you have to show up to city council meetings and challenge that and go and debate it and do your 3 minutes you have to do that. That's an area in Texas I love, Harlingen and down south by Corpus Christi. Most of that area is Hispanic. They only talk about the issues because it's not about black, white, Hispanic. It's about who's going to take care of my community. I loved it when I went down there, man. It was no black or white, none of that stuff going on. It was about who was going to come up here and fight for us. And that's what the people want to know, and they'll vote for you, and you will win, sis. You will win. So don't worry about what they've done.
And Pastor Cooper, I'm going to jump in because our candidate has to leave, but you carried me way back because my father used to own land in Harlingen, Texas, and when it was cold here in East Texas, he grew his produce and watermelons, roses, potatoes in Harlingen, Texas. And I jokingly say that my father probably was the first person to bring people from Mexico over into East Texas. And if you know what I mean, you're tracking me, right?
Absolutely.
Okay,
we did the same.
So Ms. Petra, go ahead and give us your stump speech, your final comments, and we really appreciate your coming in. And we thank you for stepping up and stepping out and running for a public office. Go ahead and give us your final comments.
Yeah, I just wanted to just address what you were saying about the educating, if you're planning on getting in politics, and that wasn't my plan. I mean, I met with some former leaders and some pastors and things like that, and I was sought out, and I accepted, and so I stepped up to the challenge. And like I tell people, whenever I apply for a job, I've never not gotten a job that I've applied for, and when I get that job, I work my job, and I do my best, and I supersede the expectations, where I work, and so that's my plan. I mean, I'm all in. I've committed to this campaign full time. I'm a nurse, but I have not done nursing since October when I announced, and I'm a real estate agent, but I'm referring all of my clients to colleagues because that's what I've been doing because I have planned to be in politics. I've been trying to meet with everyone I can. I go to all of the city council meetings and try to just gather up as much information as I can because this is totally new and I am enjoying it. It's very interesting, but it is a lot. And so that's why we have, pioneers like Dr. McKellar that, I can text and things like that, but it's a lot.
She's 100%. She is on point 100%. And I tell you, I'm the only one retired on city council. All the rest of those guys work, to include the mayor. And so that's why I end up in a lot of positions all across Tyler, speaking here, there, and everywhere, is because it takes up a lot of your time I usually have 3 to 4 events almost every single day. And sometimes I can't make it to all of those. A couple of those that she mentioned, with the housing and everything. Of course, I know everything that's going to be talked about and said because we talk about them in our executive meetings. And then whatever committee that you're on. So now you have your committee meetings. So you cannot have a family, and your husband has to really understand that
right.
commitment that you're giving is a service. And like she said, we come from a community of service. Our profession is service. My military is service. My medical is service. And so that's what I'm accustomed to. So we thank you for your service that you have given to the community. Anything else that you'd like to share with us that's our listeners out there?
Yeah, I just feel that I will serve the community well. This is a community that I've grown up in and I'm very passionate about. And if I, am fortunate enough to, have the opportunity, I think that, the community will be pleased. I'm accessible. I have the time. And, I want to do it. I said yes, and so you got to get your best.
Okay. But thank you so much, and let me just tell you, Ken, I have 4 grandchildren, so, Ken, you spend a lot of money with 10 grandchildren, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a lot.
That's outstanding.
I'm juggling a lot. I'm really juggling a lot. So, but it's well worth it.
I said yes for
a reason, so nothing happens by chance.
All right. Thank you so much for joining in with us tonight. We appreciate your service and your time to come and spend
with
us
on
Monday.
Thank you. Good night,
everyone. Marvelous Monday.
Good night.
Okay, guys. All right. We're on here. Let's bring forward and talk. I haven't heard from the other candidate that I sent out information to. Let me see if I have a text message from him. But let's talk a little bit about that trial that's going on in America. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Go ahead.
They say stink.
Go ahead, Mr. I'm sorry. Say it once more.
They say stink.
And he gets cold in there, too, and he gets wrapped up in his blanket.
Everybody just turned the cold on because he was trying to, think about heat and stink and cold and stink. It still stink, but.
Hold on, Brother Austin, let's be careful because he's at the age where he could be sick because it could be on blood thinners. We got to be careful.
It's been written. It's been all over the news. I don't know where you've been looking at, but it's been all over the news, bro. It's a thing.
I'm just saying, if he's cold and wants a blanket, he might be sick, and we have a nurse that has a PhD, so she may know something we don't know.
I'm just saying,
it might be on blood thinners.
Don't blood thinners make you cold? Yeah, it thins the blood out, that's for sure. On the news, they're saying that he stink. I'm just saying.
What does the news say, Ms. Arthur? Tell us again what the news says.
They say that there's noticeable in the court, and then, when he be nodding off, he be farting.
He'd be farting. Expelling gas?
Expelling gas. No,
All right.
Yeah, he'd be expelling gas.
You know what? I had not even heard all of that. That's amazing. Okay, what else are they saying out there?
Well, they're going to have a hearing next week because he was talking crazy, acting crazy in the courthouse. So they're going to have those hearings to see what kind of sanctions they're going to give him for acting up.
Do you think he's a little nervous?
I think he passed nervous. I think he's in another kind of zone now. He's never had to sit there like that and just have somebody. Yeah. He jump up for the, how you're supposed to wait for the judge, but when he finished, he's going to jump up and just say, "Will you sit down, sir?" And then, so after the thing, Trump said, he ain't like that because he said it just sounded like he was talking to a dog.
I see. Wow.
So
well,
he's having a hard time sitting there. It was a whole thing came out. One of his prior attorneys, the one, because it was all over the news where he was talking about you know, the one that left, the one that got out before he lost his license, you know, and he didn't want to put that about, you know, Trump be smelling.
I see. Interesting.
And that was about a month ago. That was about a month and a half ago. So now, since he's sitting in the courtroom all day, I guess everybody in the courtroom get to, experience it.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Right.
So how do you guys think this is going to all turn out? I mean, and would you, if you had been one of those 6,000 people, would you have wanted to be selected to serve on that trial? How about you, Dr. Hagney? You said no. Wait, go ahead, Ms. Arthur.
No, I had to tell him, no, he gets it. Y'all don't want me, do you? He gets it.
Because you would have said he gets it. What about you, Dr. Hadney?
Well, I tell you, I've been so caught up in so much. I haven't had the time. You know, there's so much, you know, the depth and deal we're dealing with out here and true problem we are really seeing in particular rural communities of color. I have to start identifying. I haven't had a chance to look at it. I don't even watch news anymore.
Right.
But what's going on.
You sound like somebody else.
So I don't know what's going on. And, you know, to confirm why I don't listen to news. I don't have the time. I really don't have the time. Because, we talk about
it
today. We talk about what's going on. We talk about the problem of getting broadband in rural East Texas. We talk about the health stats. We talk about them. Talking about people suffering long-term COVID, there's nothing, the gun coming, so much need to be done with that. I just don't have the time to see what somebody's doing in the courtroom, somebody's propaganda. Sure. I was just wondering how much money is being spent.
Wow. Well.
So, will anybody ever ask that question,
just,
how much money?
He just opened up $1.2 billion of his media money so that he can free up to pay those fines and stuff. So he just moved money around. He just cashed in.
Mm-hmm. And probably people probably giving him money. Probably not his.
Absolutely, they are.
You know, that's what happened. People think he's losing money. His money in America is not his money. His not.
There
you
go. There you go.
That's the deal about America. The people miss about America when it's all about dollars. Not only who spend the dollars, but we need to spend time in seeing who received the dollars. In the wars and everything else we do, everything else we vote, everything Washington, D.C. Vote on up there, you know, it's not about what people think it is. It's about the dollar. We had a discussion about health care and drug costs the other day, what people are paying and cannot pay for medication. Some of these medications, $500. I have a relative who's paying $500 per treatment of iron treatment.
Crazy.
Have to pay out of his pocket. A doctor's not assisting him with that. And so when you think about the money in America, that's really is just wasted money. But people are making a lot of money in America. They don't mind spending that money. They make more money. And of course, in America, you can raise a price on anything, and nobody questions.
Doctor, in this case, he's the one that's spending the money. The courthouse judge, they was already there. So it ain't costing us taxpayer.
I'm not talking about taxpayer. He doesn't need taxpayer money. He doesn't need the government. All he needs to do is ask for money. There are so many people out there with money to give him money. Most people, you can't track where the money coming from anyway.
Yeah.
People assume that he's there. Yeah, but, everything in health care and all that, and military and all that.
Now, he needs $175 bond, and he can't get nobody. He ain't even got $175 million. He brought in a crook bond company from outside, which now they're going to throw. They're going to go there. They're going to start taking his property. The man ain't got no money.
Yep.
I just told you, he just cashed in $1.25 billion on his media.
Yeah.
$1.2 billion.
See, we have to remember American history. You have to remember that you're in America, and you need to understand American history. If you understand American history, you see where the money's coming from. If you don't understand American history, you don't know where the money's coming from.
That's
across the board in America, healthcare, military-wise, wherever you think about.
You were talking Trump right quick. He did the true social thing on Wall Street, where his intention was to cash out, like to go IPO, and then but the trick bag was it has to go through this other process and take 6 months and so forth. So there's no guarantee he's gonna get a dime out of that. The stock is crashing since he came out. Everybody knows it's a scam. So I'm just saying, it ain't working, and he can't get money.
I'm more concerned about how we're going to treat the people with long-term COVID than what's happening in the courthouse up there. Nobody's saying that, and that's why I say I don't listen to me anymore, because people are not talking about the real problems in America across the board, military-wise, whatever you think, healthcare-wise, political, education-wise, all that. Prison system. Guy called me the other day. He just got moved back to America. He'd been traveling to Africa and all that. He said, can you help us? What the pipeline of black males into the prison system in Texas, what can be done about that? When you look at the family makeup of in that community, you look at the pregnancies, you look at all these other issues, nobody's talking about that.
We can't broad brush. We can't really. Let me share this with you all real quickly, because we want a little more to happen a lot faster, but we really cannot say, we cannot broadly say nobody is talking about this. I'm gonna name out some people who are being honored, to include my daughter for one. Let me go and find it. No, he's not there. It's in a different location. But here's what I want to say. Her big issue, my daughter, is maternal health, and so the International Honors Award, which is going to be is the 2024 nominees, which is going to be in New York on May the 4th, I believe it is. It's the World Trumpet International Honors Society. It says it's a gathering of a world of transformers that's transforming all of the issues, in particular that black people are having around the nation, not just internationally and internationally. And the honorees, let me name them off to you. Honorees: Dr. Terry Grant of the Terry Foundation, Pastor Darnell Wilson of the New Harmony Church, that's in New York, Dr. Esther Homer of the Global Missions Now, they're renowned in the other side of the world, and then Dr. Belinda Babelli of the Babelli Foundation, and then my daughter, Professor Danielle McKella Nataka of the Campus of Care Global Healthcare Corporation, and their big thing is women's health. And then there's a Patricia Rigsby Scott of Caring Passionate Helping Hands. I don't know where that one's located. Melinda Dent of the Lunchbox of Love. Rhonda Willingham, Making It Count. Sandra Eilis and the Say My Name Project. We all know that. I was involved in that. That was a Sandra Bland project. Mm-hmm. And so that's that area that Dr. Hagney is talking about right now, that prison, school to pipeline, prison to pipeline, how they phrase that. And I believe that's something that that Pastor Cooper works on. And then Christina Arnella, and that's the Ukraine Unlimited. And then Kendra Erksgans, and that's the Food Lounge. And then it goes on down the line all the way to, there's about another 10 more of them, and they're talking about unity of community of Ennis, conquer the connection by faith, free from the inside out, that's prison right there, Austin, Sonia Glitz and Glamour Boutique, and I don't know what that's about, beauty, I guess, Heart to Home, Texas, Fort Worth, Five Lows, Two Fish Outreach, and then the last one is the Roderick and Sophia Baker Foundation. All of these foundations work on various things that Octopus Complex that Dr. Hagney talked about all the time. So they're spreading their wings. I'm saying what I say, and I think Pastor Cooper said this too, is that we have to collaborate. We have to know who's working on what. And my goal is to bring all of these 501c3 organizations together. And let's collaborate and work on how bring Dr. Hagney's collaboration, bring my collaboration, bring all of us together and see how we can sit down and solve these problems. And not just me. I mean, we can have meetings all the time that you heard the young lady name and at all these meetings and all these different people. And these things have been going on not just new for her. It's new for her because she's not been involved out there. But it's been going on all the time, all across everywhere, right? Would you say, guys? You guys have been at the helm of these things for years. So that's why I suggest for her to read that health report of Northeast Texas. You mentioned all those groups.
How many of those groups know, you mentioned we need, that's what we should be talking about. What you're talking about, how many, if you go out and survey, how many people know what those groups you're doing? They're fantastic. And I'm going to render all of them involved with that. If you go and out and ask people how they were of any of those programs you just named, I'm talking about people in New York.
We're talking about people in Washington D.C. Most of these people that, because my daughter's organization is in Philadelphia, even though she works across in the Texas area, and but these are in, and then they may not know about our organizations and what we're doing down here. You know what I'm saying? So so since all politics are local, then we have to collaborate one with another here on the local level. Go ahead. Anybody. Pastor Cooper, anybody. Mr. Arthur, go right ahead. So let me ask this question. So how back to Donald Trump. So how do you guys see that since this guy has been on the scene politically, he's always been out there on the scene. I mean, he's donated to campaigns everywhere. He's been involved. He's well known. But how do you see that America has really changed since he came on the scene politically, even during his presidency when he was there for 4 years? Things have really changed in America. People and go ahead. Go ahead.
All Donald Trump did was gave a visionary figurehead to what was already here. That was already here. He just made it come alive. That's all he did.
So that's the change I'm talking about. Things used to be under the rug, right? Did it not? I mean, people were not as blatant. We see more people killing their family members. We see so much hatred in this country. People killing their parents. You never heard anything such as that when people killing. Listen to this part. Of course it was, but it wasn't in our community. It was not in. You didn't see it so much in the black community, but you do now. There was a little young boy. I don't know if you guys heard this on the news. Little young boy. He was 7 years of age. He went and killed a man who just went and killed him, seven. And then he got in trouble on the playground. Now he's 10 years of age, right? He got in trouble on the playground. And he said to this little kid, I'll kill you just like I killed that man 2 years ago. This was a 10-year-old saying this.
Yeah.
And that's how about this? That's how they found out. They had no idea who killed this man 2 years ago. But this kid said to his playmate, I'll kill you just like I killed that man 2 years ago. That's how they found out. This young... Yes, sir. Go ahead, Ms. R.
Okay, we need, if we don't do nothing else, I hope everybody understands that. Look, America is a violent society. Kids, when they, they fear the violence when they're in the womb. And when they come out, they got all this, and see, they're born into this technology, into this madness now. And so,
right.
You know, we saw, Tarzan swinging through the jungle, that was violent enough. But that's what I was looking at. Now, that ain't nothing. That ain't nothing compared to what these kids
are. You just
want
to be Tarzan. You want to swing through the jungle, huh?
I
never heard any kid on the playgrounds anywhere when I was growing up saying they're gonna hurt. Kids fought each other,
yeah.
but then the next few minutes they were playing and hugging each other.
That's parenting,
and it goes back to everything filters back to the parenting.
It absolutely does.
And so I'm just saying
that, I hope that we quit trying to pretend that, wow, how could all this be? When you sit and you know how it'd be.
You don't give them access to those iPads and laptops.
There you go. It should not be.
There's a time to put it away. There's a time for it to be locked up. And, you don't go to sleep with it in your room under your pillow. And you're going to go to your room and they're going to lock you up with a PX5 iPad. You're going to take your phone, but you got a laptop. Not in my house. Matter of fact, I'm going to take your door. I'm taking all your tools. Not in my house. No.
When I was growing up, I learned how to fire a 410 rifle. And we would line up cans on the fence. Not to shoot somebody else, to go hunting.
Right.
To go hunting.
To put meat on the table.
And target. There you go. That's what we learned to fire with. And so I didn't see this when I was growing up. Didn't see any violence like this.
But we're not going to be able to deal with it if we continue to try to compare them to us. We can't do that.
The 30-year-olds, the 40-year-olds are not being held accountable. There's a viral picture of me standing up with Representative Dave, and I told y'all I'm sounding the alarm, and people say, oh, you're switching to the Republican Party. I said, that's my state representative. So if I'm not talking to my state representative, I'm not getting things
there
done in
go.
My community. So I'm
there
holding people accountable, and I don't care who takes a picture and runs it around.
Because he's supposed to represent everybody. I don't care what political party he's part of. He's supposed to represent everybody in that community.
I'm holding them accountable.
I'm going to ask you a question. Where do you all see the church in all of this? Meanwhile, I'm asking that question because, we have 20 church hubs. And we're getting ready to look at a development program for the pastors, for the leaders.
They're trying to get people in the pews.
How to move.
To answer that question, Dr. Hagney, the same people that sit in that pew, that would be me, you, Mr. Arthur, Pastor Cooper, you, we are the same people that's out in the community. We sat in those pews. We said we are the church. When you get out of that church building, the real work for the Lord is out there in the community, right?
This developmental program we're going to work with the church hub is to work with the pastor to get out to do what you're saying, to go out in the community. I'm asking you all opinion, a suggestion, what should be included in that agenda to work with the pastor or leaders in the church to get them out of their churches and go out in the community. Because the battle is out in the community. We don't have all it. Everything, and you can say the reason why we're in the mess we're in because, where we move from, and particularly
that's
in our community.
We left God out of the plan. We got a pastor on here. He can answer that. The Ministerial Alliance, number one. But go ahead, Pastor Cooper.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The pastors right now are worried about getting people back in the church.
there's an article came out that 31% of African Americans that were attending church before COVID have not
That's
returned.
It.
And they're
That's
not
it.
Going to return. They're not coming
what
back.
Did that survey
We have been blessed at my congregation because we're filling up those pews again.
Yes.
And people
yes.
are coming.
Yes.
Dr. Harris
yes.
can tell you that.
I'm a winner. You're gonna have me celebrating when you start talking about it. But
exactly.
you gotta ask the question why people are not coming back to the pews.
Okay.
They did ask the question. They said they have their laptops, iPads, and they get a sermon within 5 minutes, and they go back to drinking.
I'm just going to use your church as an example.
Okay. All right.
The success that you know they're having, they're in the middle of all what we're talking about. Why is then the question? Why is it in your church? There are other churches that in our hub doing likewise. Why
That's right.
are these churches that are being successful, the whole world need to know and look and see what they're doing?
Right.
Because
right.
you measure the result.
And talking about it.
Don't measure what someone say. Measure the result.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest
mm-hmm.
just look at 10. I'm sorry, you church. Look at
That's
what
right. you're
women, women just had a retreat or having a retreat sometime soon.
Yes, we did. Last Saturday.
And the gentleman having a program, and I don't know
That's
how many
it.
Ladies was there. Why are the ladies coming to your retreat? Why are they coming to all the other programs in your church and other churches having problems with people coming into the pew?
Yeah.
That's,
I'm just like,
that's, the, that's the exception, not the rule, what's happening right now. I'm just telling you what the survey said across the United States. 41% of African mm-hmm. Americans are not attending churches.
Sure.
Now,
and you're right,
some,
about
active,
you're right about
but
it.
But
yeah,
did the survey?
Churches are passing.
They say why they
pastors didn't. And churches that allow active and they out there being the nucleus and they're out there being the octopus program. They're doing all of that stuff. So those churches are making a difference. Like we paid our church off in the COVID. So, you know, that's great. But my point, though, is that this is what's happening. I'm reporting the news. I'm not telling mm-hmm. you to fix it or anything. I'm just telling you this is what's happened. And when you talk about using the churches, the churches are suffering right now, and there's some churches that are going under, and there's some churches that are not making their payments, and churches that actually need to merge together, and they refuse to. They have these big edifices and buildings that are empty, basketball courts and dining halls that are taped off and closed off. You can go across to the United States right now. And on every corner, there's a big, beautiful church, and I don't care. You can have a church on every street. That's great. But at the same mm-hmm. time, though, they're suffering right now. And then you have the exception of the churches like myself, Dr. McKellar Church, and yours
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
are making a difference out there. But that's on purpose. Well, before you didn't have to do all of that. And that goes back to a generation that's not going
mm-hmm.
to church. And I guarantee you, most of those churches that you're talking about, they're successful. There's an old Methodist church that's been around 165 years, and the average age person in the church is 80 years of age, and that parking lot is packed, and they've been out with a pastor for 6 years. Because in the Methodist Foundation right now, it's hard for them to pay the pastors. So in the African-American churches, they're the first ones not to have a pastor. So what they do is just grab what they can. As a matter of fact, there's been a couple of Baptist pastors jumped over there because they're trying to help out, go around, and serve all the communities. But the church, the organism itself, the church, the people, they show up even when they don't have a preached sermon and they're going through the process.
Right.
But you can have a praise and worship. You can have the best praise and worship team, Shirley Caesar, Breed, whatever, Israel Harden and his band or whoever you want, bringing T.D. Jakes out. And you might have five people show up.
They need to sing Shirley Caesar about Hold My Mute. Just because the guy, see, you got to look at what's being said in these churches. When the guy from the seminary, he wanted to get involved because he was saying the younger pastors don't listen to the older pastors that you see out in the community. That young people don't listen. Don't listen to the 80-year-old. That's a major mistake. Not listening to the 80-year-old above. He said the same thing happening in the seminary. He told me just Saturday. Young pastors in the seminary don't want to listen to the older pastors. And that's amazing.
They try to come up with creative ways.
Just tell them to sing Surly Caesar, hold my mule. Just tell them to sing Surly Caesar, hold my mule.
Jamal Bryant been married for a couple of times now.
Hold my mule. See, that's all. That's all.
I'm gonna tell you, gentlemen, what's really important, and that is, a church dies out when you don't have youth. And we got babies being born all the time in our congregation. We got young couples who have, if they're having the babies, the church is growing. So you heard Pastor Cooper say what the average age, that's a problem.
Hey,
because
a problem.
You don't have that youth that's in there. Mm-hmm. So you got to figure out how you're going to be able to attract the youth to come into the church.
Yeah.
And
we
that's the key right there. You don't do it by false doctrine. That's
exactly
what I'm talking about. Is that what you said, Pastor Cooper?
Said that he's been asked for a couple of times, and he has a new doctrine for younger church members because the older church members saying, well, you know, you get a divorce, you commit adultery, and nobody can marry you, you can't get married, and da-da-da. And they say, oh, it's all law. So he got a new doctrine where come to his church, whether you've been married or divorced, no pressure, just come on. It's just the new age, new wave. Just, you know, be with who you want to be with and just come to church. Okay, here we go. So here's what I say, I
don't have a heaven or hell to put anybody in. I'm not a judge.
Right.
We only have
one judge, right?
So I'm not here to judge anybody, okay, anybody. Bottom line in the story. And we cannot judge. Judge not that ye be not judged. I believe that's what it says, right? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I think, did I hear somebody else in the background? Did I hear Ms.?
Dr. McKellar, I've been on the last 15, 20 minutes. This Pastor Dr. Floyd.
Oh my goodness, this is Dr. Floyd. Oh my goodness, you didn't text me to let me know. I thought I recognized that voice in the background.
I called into the number.
Thank you so much.
As a young pastor, I have been basking. I have been basking and listening to my seasoned pastor talk, the seasoned men talk. I've been listening and basking.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for joining us. Let me introduce everybody. This is Dr. Dexter Floyd. He is also running for City Council District 2, and we're going to hear from him right now. He's a longtime friend of mine and a young pastor in the community doing great work. He is a principal at one of our schools here in the city. And so, Dr. Floyd, you can tell them more about yourself, and then they may have a couple of questions. We did have one of the others that we had Ms. Petra Hawkins on a little early on. And so now we're going to hear from you. And thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. You're listening and on with Marvelous Monday. And we have a host from around the state of Texas and in East Texas, all the way into Kentucky. And we're broadcast nationwide, but we also broadcast right here in Tyler, Texas. Go right ahead.
I'll tell you, I really have just had such a phenomenal time just sitting back and listening even to you moderate and doing such a great job being the only woman in this great cadre of phenomenal men.
I'm going to stand my ground.
We know. You're Dr. Shirley McKellar. We already know you're going to stand your ground. We're kind of hard-pressed to find another one like you, but I really have enjoyed just being a part of the celebration. And I am Dexter Floyd. I graduated with my bachelor degree there at Jarvis Christian College. I had my first taste of an HBCU. Phenomenal time. Then I went to University of Texas at Tyler to get my master's degree in educational leadership. And then finally I went to Baylor University to get my doctorate degree in learning and organizational change. And so I have been in education the last 24 years. I've been at the school where I am now as the head principal here in the city of Tyler, there in a Butler College community, and the old Stewart school for the last 8 years. And it has just been phenomenal just being in that space. And so I thought to myself, you know, back when Broderick was giving up his seat because he had served his time, I thought, you know, this would be a great opportunity to now move to the next level as it relates to taking care of your community. As a school teacher, I could only do so much for my classroom. As a principal, only so much there in my school. But as you're moving into being city council, I'm taking care of not just the community, but District 2 is a piece of Tyler. Mm-hmm. And so it's more than just District 2, but it's also being what I can be for the city of Tyler. And so it's been a part of who I am. I understand the city council is a labor of love. I'm not getting a salary for it, but what I do get is the blessing of being able to take care of the families of District 2. And so I am, as my grandma would say, I'm high and happy and peacock proud to be able to be a part of the ballot and just have an opportunity to serve the people here in the city and in District 2.
Beautiful. So well said. So I'm going to ask you the same questions that I actually ask your opponent. And I'll begin by saying, why do you feel that you are the best candidate for this position?
You know, I really believe that we all three of us that's on the ballot, we know, Dr. McKellar, we know the political buzzwords. We know infrastructure. We know sustainable development. We know economic development. We know revitalization. We know all of that. But I honestly believe that I am, I'm going to say, the only candidate who really talks about having a heart for the people of District 2. This, what I call a labor of love, has nothing to do with me getting a photo op. It has nothing to do with me just showing up. My heart, because I've been doing it the last 24 years, but definitely the last 8 years in this particular community, is taking care of the families that are there. And that's what I want to do in a more global level, and not just here, there in Butler College, but it spreads widespread, and we know all the different areas that District 2 inhabits. But that's why I feel like I am. I also understand, just like Ms. Hawkins and Ms. Big, I understand, I don't know if he really understands, but I understand the importance of this feat and that 1976 lawsuit that we won to make sure that West Tyler District, as it was once called, had representation. And I know the importance of keeping that representation, but I know that the families of our district need some help and they need some hope. And I met Miss Rosie. Never met her, went door knocking, met her, and that stuck with me. She said to me, 87 years old, there in Butler College, she said, "I need some help and I need some hope." And it touched my heart. I have a principal's heart, but I have a pastor's heart. It touched my heart because I heard her say that I need help and I need hope, and I want to be, and I just given an opportunity, I'm going to be that help and that hope that Miss Rosie needs.
Beautiful. So well said. So there was a question, and I'm sure you heard that a little early on, where they were talking about Dr. Hagney in particular. Dr. Hagney has a plan called the Octopus Plan, and he works directly with the churches. But what is important for me, Dr. Dexter, is for people to get to the polls to vote. These seats, District 2, District 3, have been won with a couple of so hundred people. And it's really important for us to be able to let the people know that their voices are important and important for them to get out to vote and vote the right person in office. You want to dialogue a little bit on what you've been able to do to get your name out there to let the people know that you are running. They know who you are in this community. Like you said, you've been in education for a long time. People know you in the educational component. They know you in the religious component. what can we do differently? Can you think of anything that we could do differently to get more people out to the polls to vote and make them understand that all politics are local and it's really crucial for you to have the right person on city council? Any comments on that?
People have to connect your face and your heart with what's really going on. Now, as I said earlier, we got the buzzwords. We got them down. But like, I used Ms. Roby because she's a real person. I never met her a day in my life. But we got to get up. We got to get as my brother was talking earlier about what we need to do for the church, and he wants to take them outside the walls. We really have to get out and go and knock and let people. A young man said to me, I'm not a councilman as of yet. He said, man, I have never met a councilman before, and you came over here to talk. You came over here to talk to us. They were sitting in the yard. I said, come on. I told Alicia, come on, let's just go over here and talk and see. People have to be able to attach you with their cause. And can feel from your heart that they got to believe it. And you're not, and I hate to say it like this, but you're almost a salesman. You have to sell yourself to them. They ain't got to get out. They ain't got to get off their couches and go and vote for you. We got to give them a reason to do so. And I've been really honing in on that 18 to 30 group of mine because, listen, my grandmother, she knows. She going to vote for sure. My dad, he's going to vote for sure. They lived in a time where they knew this was the way to make real change in their cities, in their America, in their lives. But the 18, the 30s, they've always had this. So we're talking civic responsibility. They don't really know it, but they'll listen to somebody who they respect. And so that's why every 2 years I rent a bus to take my seniors to vote there for the presidential election, vote for our midterm elections. Every 2 years for the last 8 years, their first civic responsibilities are with me. And I'm hoping that lesson in and of itself will last a lifetime. And so they have to trust somebody. And so I think that's kind of where we are. We got a group of people that's going to always come out to vote. I got that paperwork. I know who's done what in the last 10 years. But and they're coming by the 500s. That's about it. But it's another group that we haven't tapped into. And so I have to tap into that group to get them ready and to understand the importance of the civic responsibility.
Sounds like you've done your due diligence. Tenneman, do you all have any questions for Dr. Dexter? We'll start with Pastor Cooper.
No, sounds like he's on point. What do you see, because you're dealing with the schools and the young folks right now, you know, I gave out the stat that 41% of them not engaged in churches and probably not in politics, too, even higher than that. What do you see that as a trend? And if so, as Dr. Hagney asked, what to do about it?
Well, it's definitely a trend. I'm fully aware of those statistics as well. But see, this is what people we're scared to look at. Dr. McKellen and the rest of these great men on here, is that we're no longer living a linear life anymore. That linear life of you being married for 50 years, you working on a job for 40 years, 50 years, that life is over. People going to a church for 70 years until they die, 80, 90 years, that linear life is over. So, and it's hard for a lot of people to understand that. COVID made us realize that a lot of stuff that we had to have, we really didn't have to have it. We wanted it and we operated in it. And once they came back, people realized, you know what, I ain't got to sit down. And I'm not saying whether that's good or bad, because I heard you talk about success early in the church. We have to look at the word success, and people define success a whole lot differently. Some people do define success of all of us coming back to church the way things were. Then this other group says success is, I understand that I'm now dealing with a social population, and the fact that I have 300 people online, 400 people online every week, but they're still hitting the Venmo, and they're still hitting the Cash App, and they're still hitting the Givelify, and they're still tithing and giving to my ministry. I understand that. And this is the last analogy, and I hope you get this. When Dallas to Tyler, that distance has never changed. Once upon a time, you got into the horse and the buggy to get there. It took you hours upon hours, maybe a day to get there. Then that man invented a car that was going 15 miles per hour. Still took you 7-8 hours to get there. We moved to 55, 2.5 hours to get there, 75, an hour and a half to get there. But if I really want to get there, I go to Tyler Pound Field, go to the airport, and I get there in 21 minutes. The distance from Dallas to Tyler never changed.
That's
but
it.
The method
That's
in
it.
Which we got there changed according to the times. So we have to catch up with the times and understand that that linear life for a lot of people is gone, but those that are still into the linear life, let's celebrate that, but we don't want to diminish those that are kind of moving in a different direction. My kids, my millennials and Gen Zs, they're moving in a different direction. And you're right. Their parents are not making them go to church. But guess what? I got quite a few of them that comes to my church on Sundays, not because I'm such an awesome whatever. I built that relationship with them, and they started coming to church because it was me. Not even because they wanted to come to church, but because it was me. And so whether people from needing something to vote for or something to believe in, that's what gets people up and out of the house.
Brilliant, brilliant. That's brilliant. So well said, so well said. Mr. Arthur, you have any comments or questions?
You're going to say that, Tyler Zucker, they got two quality candidates, sound like to me, running for the same position.
There's three candidates running for the position.
Well, I'm talking about the two. I said two quality. I don't know the other one. I know I heard these two saying they have two quality candidates, and they're lucky to have them, is all I'm saying. I like that. First of all, I like where you're coming from as far as when you're talking about the youth, about how they come to your church. They come to your church because they trust you. Not because they trust religion. They trust you. And that's where the question was asked earlier, why folks ain't coming. They ain't coming because they don't trust the people that's there.
Yep.
And until they understand that they actually have to be trustworthy, then they're going to be, stuck in that old paradigm. And I like to say it about COVID because I observed the same thing. Once you got off the grind and the pressure dropped and you realize, wait a minute, and a lot of them took the same position with their church and their pastors. You know, they were being, in other words, instead of the pastor, you come to church and they leave not afraid to die. They come to church and leave scared, and they give them their money. So I think a lot of folks realize, hey, wait a minute. You know, I just pray right to God, some straight from me to him. So, I like what you're doing. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, which I asked her, by you two being two quality candidates for African-American seats, what were your concerns you had in about, about splitting the community and us not being able to hold that seat? Have you thought about that?
Yes, sir. I mean, it's something that we all thought about initially, somebody had to announce first, and somebody had to announce second or third or whatever. That's what it is. Now, that's a part of a democracy. Everybody has an opportunity to be there. Mm-hmm. That this is the thing. That is something that we've held on. We've kind of beat that dead horse, and I say that because we are so accustomed to 500 people coming out to vote. We're not lacking people to vote. It is 13,000 registered voters in District 2. And so what I have to do is make sure that I turn out the vote. If Ms. Hawkins turn out the vote, and even if Mr. Dinger turn out the vote, if we got 13,000 and we turning people out to vote, there's a clear winner in there somewhere. We are accustomed to lackluster when it comes to people coming out to vote. Maybe people haven't had a reason that they really wanted to get up off the couch and come out to vote. We'll see by May the 4th. But I haven't been stuck on that because I've done and I'm doing my due diligence as it relates to knocking on doors and phone banking and calling people, and you get your next door neighbor and let's go do this because we can do better than 500 people out to vote. Again, you think about that, 13,000, that's less than a percent of those people coming to vote. So it's not about splitting the vote, it's getting people out to vote. And if we focus more on getting people out to vote than splitting the vote, there is no way we can't win this thing.
Brilliant.
So that other dude can't get 50 plus one, and if we end up getting the runoff, let's roll with it. The runoff day is on Juneteenth weekend. So let's roll with
it's interesting that you said that, Dr. Dexter, because that's the skinny out there, is that we're probably going to have a runoff between the two of you candidates. But I love how you put that out there. That is brilliant, and you are 100% correct. We focus too much on this splitting the vote when we're not really getting the vote out there, because that's ridiculous that we get 500 people out when you got 13,000, and I got more than that in district too. That's why I brought out the point of that winning this election with a little over 200 people make no sense to me.
Makes no sense.
Dr. Hagney, do you have a quick question for him before it's almost time for him to go, because we want him to have the last few minutes of his stump speech to say whatever it is that he wants to say to us. Quickly, Dr. Hagney, do you have anything else? If not, go ahead. Dexter, we're going to give you – unfortunately, we end at 10 o'clock, but we have an amazing two hours every single Monday night. And then I want you to come in on Thursday for our Thursday show. We'd be pleased to have you to come. Go ahead and
yes,
give us your final comments.
Yes. But again, thank you so much for having me in this space. And I can say this, you know, and I've talked about me. I've been on radio shows today and I'm on show tonight. I can say this. Thank you for being – and I'm going to say this to you. Thank you for being who you are. Us and providing the space for just all over the nation, the people to come in and share their experiences and what's going on, and even with politics, with the church, it's real life stuff that's going on. And I appreciate that for you being a role model for us when it comes to civics, when it comes to local politics, when it just comes to being integrity. I mean, you never find anybody. And listen, I know y'all know, maybe y'all don't know, you're going to find nobody sharper. I don't care if she's going to the grocery store. She going to have Chanel on and high heels. And it's because that's when you go out, you never know who you're going to meet. You got to always. Absolutely. But this campaign is a labor of love. It's something that I'm really enjoying being a part of. And I just wanted, if we got some District 2 listeners out there, let's please get out to vote. Let's have record turnout. And I got to say it, vote for me. I need your support. Vote for me.
I understand.
Dexter Floyd. Thank you so much, Dr. McKellar. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Dr. Dexter. It's a pleasure to have you on. You're such a you brought a lot of energy into us tonight, and we really appreciate that. Listen, you've been listening to Marvelous Monday, and it is indeed Marvelous Monday, and we are so happy to have these two amazing candidates on with us tonight, and may the best candidate win. And he's already told you we need to get more people to the polls. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Miss Rihanna. Thank you, Dr. Hagney. It's great to have you back on. Mr. Arthur and Pastor Cooper, it's been amazing. And now we're going to listen to our theme song, and we'll turn it over to Miss Rihanna. We'll see you on next week. And I leave on Thursday morning heading down to Austin, Texas for the 92nd South Central Regional Conference of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. But I'll be on the phone talking to Dr. Dexter Floyd on Thursday, and you guys tune in as well. See you next time. Bye for now.
Thank you.
It's marvelous. And Monday.
It's marvelous.
Ms. One day when the glory comes, it will be ours. Be out. Oh, one day when the war is won, we will be sure. We will be sure. Oh, glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, the spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us.
That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, no.
Glory, glory.
Oh. Now the war is not over, victory isn't won, but we'll fight on to the finish, and then when it's all done, we'll cry glory, oh glory, oh, we'll cry glory, oh.
Every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the League of Justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. The biggest weapon, it's to stay peaceful. We sing, our music is the cuts that we bleed through. Somewhere in the dream we had an epiphany. Now we right the wrongs in history. No one can win the war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory. The coming of the Lord, my eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes,
glory. We'll see you on next Monday. Bye for now. Be safe out there. Good night.